okay. And still I struggled with a little bit of, am I smart enough to get my master's? You know, like there was always that intruder coming into my brain saying, are you sure about that?
Are you overwhelmed by motherhood and barely keeping your head above water? Are you confused and frustrated by how all the other moms make it look so easy? You can't figure out how to manage the chaos in your mind, your home, or your family. I get you, mama. Parenting with ADHD is hard. Here is your permission slip to let go of the Pinterest-worthy visions of organization and structure fit for everyone else. Let's do life like our brains do life. Creatively, lovingly, and with all our might. When we embrace who we are and how our brains work, we can figure out how to live our lives successfully and, in turn, lead our families well. At the end of the day, we just want to be good moms, but spoiler alert, you are already a great mom. ADHD does not mean you're doomed to be a hot mess, mama. You can rewrite your story from shame spiral to success story, and I'll be right here beside you to cheer you on. Welcome to Motherhood in ADHD. Hey there, successful mama. It's your friend, Patricia Sung. Today, we're chatting with one of my Instagram follows turned friend, Caitlin Mabry. Now, Caitlin is an ADHD mama of four, some of whom have ADHD as well. And Caitlin's background is in special education, including a master's degree, which is a huge accomplishment, especially given her track record with school as a kid. Caitlin was diagnosed at the age of 10, and we talk about what it's like to know that you have ADHD as you grow up, all the way through how her ADHD affects her motherhood on the daily. We talk about labeling our kids and the fear and uncertainty that goes with that, and how we ADHDers tend to have a lower sense of self-worth and confidence. She shares how we can teach our kids to accept and feel comfortable around people who are different from us. She is the author of the children's book, Journey with Me Through ADHD, which she has recently turned into a podcast for kids about ADHD, and I am just in love. Let's meet your new friend, Caitlin Mabry.
So let's welcome Caitlin to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Well, if you could give us the very short version of your diagnosis journey and how you found out about your ADHD.
It was a long, long time ago when I was 10 years old. I was taken to an appointment by my parents and I wasn't given a ton of information, but I do remember I played games. It was a pleasant experience, but I remember leaving there and having my parents sit in the car with me and tell me, you have something called ADHD. And I remember just thinking, well, what does that mean? What do you mean I have ADHD? Am I going to die? Am I like, what's wrong with me? I know it sounds terrible, but I remember these thoughts going through my head. And I think it's really important that I share this because I think we need to be mindful of maybe what our kids are thinking and maybe what they're not saying. And I just remember feeling very alone. And I remember feeling very confused and just not sure what that meant, that I had this diagnosis called ADHD. And especially hearing those words, attention deficit. So deficit told me there might be something wrong with me and then hyperactive and then disorder. I mean, those are just such negative words. And so I just really wrestled with that throughout childhood. So fast forward, my parents did a great job trying to accommodate, making sure I did really well with lists. They had charts. They talked to teachers. My teachers were wonderful. They gave me lots of resources and lots of support. And so I was very, very blessed in that way. So then fast forward a little bit further, I decided that when I went to college that I wanted to go into early childhood special education because I wanted to help kids who may be struggling because school was a huge struggle for me. And so I wanted to get into the classroom as a teacher and I wanted to become an educator for those kids who might be struggling too, because I wanted to empathize with them and have some sort of an understanding of the struggle. So I got my undergrad in early childhood special education. And here's the interesting part. I was always a BC student all through elementary school, right? And then all of a sudden, when I got into this early childhood special education dual license program, you would think, I mean, it was an intense program, right? It was very intense. I ended up getting all A's straight across the board because we have these interest-driven, passion-seeking mm-hmm. minds. And guess what? That was my interest and that was my passion. And so that's where I found success. It was just really cool feeling as a student going from being more of a BC, sometimes D student to finding that passion and that purpose and doing what I feel that I was born to do. And so I actually, which we're going to talk about this later, I wrote the book that I published in college. Mm-hmm. And
oh, I didn't realize you wrote it in college.
Yes. And so there's significance with it because my professor at the time, she, I've later found out, had ADHD. She was an adult with ADHD. And I'll never forget presenting it in this class that I was taking. I was supposed to just create a resource for kids who had disorder or disability. And of course, I chose my own. And so I wrote this book and she ran down the aisle and she said, "You need to publish this book." And I was like, what? Well, so I was flooded though with insecurity, fear of failure, uncertainty, you know, all these things were coming to the surface. I just lacked a lot of confidence. And I think a lot of that, the reason I really wanted to bring that to the surface is because I sat on that book for 10 years. And a lot of the reason why is because I was struggling with rejection sensitivity. I was struggling with a feeling of fear of transparency, because here it was a book about me essentially as a child with growing up with ADHD, and I was going to give
Hello
it out
everyone.
To the world. Hello. And it was scary. You know, there's fear yeah. there. And so I think a lot of my internal struggles that I had never addressed and never worked on or worked through because I didn't know the way that my brain was working, a lot of that was seen in my process of publishing, or, you know, even the thought around publishing my book. I didn't feel like I was good enough. I didn't feel like I was smart enough. I didn't feel like I was capable of taking that step to becoming an author, you know? So I think that's just really important to bring up, because I think so often I hear parents tell me, you know, I just don't want my child to be labeled, or I don't want to talk about their diagnosis. But I think sometimes that can do our kids an injustice, because if it's not talked about, then it can't be worked on or worked through and navigated. And so then there can be long-term struggles because of that. So,
yeah, because I think when you don't know why you are the way they are, and actually just reported a podcast a couple episodes about this, is that you then think that you're the problem. You know there's a problem. And as a kid, you look around and you think, must have been me. And then Absolutely. You take that on and you're like, I'm the problem. I'm the one who can't figure it out. I'm the one who can't remember stuff. I'm the one. Instead of saying, hey, so this is why your brain is the way it is. It's not you. You are not the broken one.
Exactly. That makes the shift between a fixed mindset, you know, struggle, challenge-based approach, and that mm-hmm. shifts it to the growth mindset, you know, strength-based approach.
Right.
And so, yeah, I absolutely agree.
So I want to go back because you said so many good things. I'm over here like furiously scribbling notes because I'm like, ooh, I got to ask about that. Ooh, I got to ask about that. When you're talking about in school, about how you were always like just the schmeh student, and then you get to college and all of a sudden it's like your brain's on fire because this is what your specialty is. How did you see that change in the way that you approach things as a whole? Was that just in that one bubble of school, or do you feel like that started to radiate out into other parts of your life?
I definitely do think that it allowed me to gain confidence that I was capable of intellectually pursuing something. And it was a sign to me, it was showing me that I was created for a purpose and this is my purpose. And it kind of drove the trajectory of the next step I took. So then that actually drove me into pursuing a master's as a reading specialist. So that was the next thing. Again, I think if I maybe would have taken a different road, it wouldn't have been a stepping stone to have that nugget of confidence that, okay. And still I struggled with a little bit of am I smart enough to get my master's? You know, like there was always that intruder, right? Coming into my brain saying, are you sure about that? But then I thought, this is just a testament to going from becoming an early childhood educator to doing something that actually I'm taking from my biggest struggle to a strength. So to be clear, I was a terrible reader growing up. And so it was kind of a punch in the face to read. Like I was like, see, bam, I can get good at something I struggled with. And what it did was, is I think I harnessed my empathy and my compassion towards kids who were struggling because I felt it so deeply. And I wanted to help them. I wanted to help them not struggle so much. And so that drove me to become a reading specialist. So it was something, my biggest struggle became now one of my strongest aspects of who I am, because it was something that I don't know what the word is. Sorry.
It's ADHD brains.
Everyone, I know.
Everyone listening is like, yep, I've been.
And it's gone.
Yeah. It is. It's funny when I listen back to myself sometimes, I'm like, I literally just stopped in the middle of a sentence. And in my head, I finished that sentence. And out loud, I did not. And then I'm like, oh, my husband was right.
Well, and sometimes I'll say, like, it's in my head, but because our brains are so quick, right? All those thoughts are just boop, 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 boop. Yeah. And sometimes I'm talking and then my brain hasn't caught up or hasn't, you know, quite organized the next thought that I'm going to share.
Like it's all coming together. Just let my gears finish turning. We're getting there.
Right.
So we see where you had college and then reading specialist, and then what did you do with that, like in your job and career? And I guess in that time of utilizing all that knowledge you've gained in school, where did you go from there?
I piloted a blended preschool program. Half of my kids were typically developing and the other half had special needs. And so it was such a cool opportunity to do a few things. I was able to facilitate relationships between kids that had more of the neurotypical brain with our kiddos who might be struggling in different areas. And I don't know. I think I brought a deeper sense of empathy into every teaching opportunity that I had. So I taught in early childhood special ed for 7 years before I chose to stay home with my kids. And I felt like every year I just had this deeper connection with the kids because I understood them on an almost like a more intimate level of thinking. I understood how, you know, their uniquely wired brain was struggling in some areas. And the super cool part, right, is because I do have an ADHD brain, I was able to find some of those strengths of being on the fly teacher. I mean, I literally would meet the child where they're at. Something wasn't working. I would change my lesson. Bam. The whole lesson, I drove my assistants absolutely crazy, but it hurt. And I have kids who still will reach out to me 15 years later and tell me that I was their favorite teacher. And I think it's really because of the empathy piece. And I think they felt how much I loved them and how much I cared about harnessing their strengths and really empowering them to be the best versions of themselves and teaching them in different ways until they understood whatever we were learning.
Mama, are you looking for some extra support? Could you use a few more like-minded mamas in your circle? Here is your official invitation to join our Facebook group, the Motherhood and ADHD Community. Here you can ask questions, share advice, but most importantly, know that you're not alone. Click on the link in the show notes or search on Facebook for Motherhood and ADHD Community. So come join our little corner of the internet with other mamas who know how your brain works and won't look at you crazy when you share what's floating around inside there. Instead, they'll say, I get it. I've been there and I know how that is. So come on, what are you waiting for? See you in there. Again, that's the Motherhood in ADHD Community on Facebook.
I want to go back to what you said about teaching the kids who are neurotypical to be more, and I forget the word you use, like sympathetic or empathetic, and like their relationship with the kids who are different. What would you say is your like go-to tip or whatever? Like, how do you teach kids to understand that people are different?
I think a big thing is helping them find the language for it. Oh, wow. Look how creative Johnny is. Like, help them see the strength and be like, he has such a busy brain, and that busy brain helps him be so creative. So I feel like helping facilitate those conversations between the kids and modeling the language with them are two super helpful tools that we can give kids. Because that's the thing is, I think a lot of times the teasing and the bullying and the is all really based on misunderstanding and not having the words or not knowing what to say. And so the wrong thing comes out, right? We're all guilty of having the wrong thing come out sometimes. So I feel like as adults, if we can take the opportunity to come alongside our kids that may be neurotypical and might not completely understand why their peer is saying the things they're saying or doing the things they're doing, but coming alongside them and helping them see it from a different lens. Like,
so like narrating the situation
exactly
out loud almost.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Like, oh, Johnny's spinning in his chair. Wow, he must have lots of energy right now. You know what I mean? Like, just
right. Making it normal.
Exactly. Exactly.
Words to
I it. Have a lot of energy too. Don't you? Because that's the thing is maybe they see their peer doing something more than typical. Mm-hmm. I mean, we experience the same things. It's just seen in different ways, right? Or we're able to regulate it more or, you know,
right. Like everybody spins in their chair.
Neurotypical. Yes. They can regulate it more. And so right. I think the connection piece is big too. Okay. So like, let's say Susie is doing something repetitive and the peer's kind of looking at it and be like, she really wants to do that lots of times so that she can see if she can get it right. You know what I mean? Or maybe like, I wonder what she like in asking those questions. And it's okay to ask questions, right? I think it's important to, and then again, bring it back to them. Be like, sometimes we do things multiple times too, don't we? You know, so I think, like you said, normalizing it in terms of I can still connect with that person, even though they're doing something that might look a little bit different, I can still connect with them.
I think when we teach kids that skill at a young age, then it just becomes normal. When they're learning it at 3 and 4, then when they see it at 7 and 8, they're like, oh, well, yeah, that's some people do that. There's not like that alert there or that fear there because like, well, oh yeah, some people are different mm-hmm. and they just move along as opposed to them not knowing what to say or feeling uncomfortable. The younger that we start that at, the more equipped they are, I guess.
Exactly. Well, and when you were saying that, that just made me think just the power of modeling to emphasize that. I've just noticed even my kids will watch me and how I interact with someone. I mean, even there is an old man walking down our street today. He's this man that lives down the street and he has Parkinson's. And so he has a walker mm-hmm. and he looks different, you know, like there's some right. differences there. And they just watched me like a hawk and how I interacted with him and how I had just a very normal conversation with him. And I was like, wow, you're moving so good. Good job. You know, encouraging him. And so I think that the language they hear us use towards mm-hmm. people who may outwardly appear different, and it doesn't have to be a different kind of interaction either. I think that there's power in that modeling, just how we treat people with respect and kindness and love. And I've noticed especially my 9-year-old, that she'll follow suit and I'll watch her then interact with, you know, others that maybe look a little different or act a little different and I see her tenderness and it just makes my mama heart so happy that she's being so unconditionally loving towards them.
Yeah. And that's hard for us as parents to step out there because we think like, oh no, like what if we say something wrong? What if we fumble it up or point out something that's uncomfortable? But I think it goes back almost like what we were seeing earlier of the person who has Parkinson's knows they have Parkinson's. It's not like they aren't aware that things are different for them. So mm-hmm. if we're pointing out something that they're doing, it's not like when it's not in like a mean way and you're narrating for your kids of, oh, well, you know, that person has to use a walker because their legs don't work as well as they used to. So they're using the walker to help, that it makes it like when you put it out in the open, it's not scary and it's not intimidating. And then everyone can kind of like breathe this sigh of relief.
Right.
And then it's just not as uncomfortable.
Well, and it's not as secretive, Mm-hmm. Right. There's no, I feel like then you eliminate the shame behind it too.
Yeah.
Because I feel like sometimes there's an indirect shame if it's not talked about, or if you're just looking and that's, you know, not, a, well, so we were at the mall the other year. I think it was like last year.
100 million years ago. Yes.
I was like, oh, that was a while ago. But still, there was this younger guy in a wheelchair and my kids were kind of looking at it. And I was like, oh, I'm like, that's interesting. He has a wheelchair. I wonder, people are in wheelchairs for all different reasons, because they're asking me questions. And so we were talking about it. And so my one daughter, my 6-year-old, is very bold and very, and she was like, well, can I go ask him why he's in the wheelchair? And I was like, I mean, I could tell he was a safe person. I walked with her and right. She was like, hi. And she asked, and he loved it. He just smiled and he was like, yeah, you know, I was born with, I think he had something with his spine, and he was like, yeah, so I can't use my, and she was like, oh, and so she was asking questions, and I just, it was such a cool experience because it was just, it took the shame out of it. There's no shame that he's in the wheelchair. You know, right. we all look and act differently in different ways. And one of his differences is that he has a wheelchair, and that's, there's nothing wrong with that. It just part of what makes him unique, you know, just like there's things that make you unique. So I feel like that's getting rid of that shame is a huge piece too. Well, so, and getting rid of the shame around the ADHD is a big thing. So tying it into the ADHD, right?
For sure.
Because I think there's a lot of indirect shame that goes on, especially when our executive function challenges aren't understood or aren't addressed. Mm-hmm. I feel that we put a lot of shame on ourselves if it's untouched.
So much. I'm like, do I want to open this can of worms?
That's for another episode.
I would say that'll be another conversation, another episode. So kind of going back to your journey, how do you feel like your ADHD has affected your motherhood, both in, you know, strengths and in struggles?
Yeah. Motherhood has shed a whole new light on my ADHD.
The whole shebang.
Yeah. Talk about a can of worms. Yes. Opened right up. No, I mean, it's really interesting because obviously as a mom, you want to always strive to become the best mom that you can be, right? But at the same time, being a mom with an ADHD brain, a lot of my emotional dysregulation shows its head. Mm-hmm. A lot of my impulsivity sometimes will surface. My working memory was always a challenge, but I think each one of my children that I birthed took a little bit more of that with them.
You're like, I donated those brain cells to you. Use them well.
Yeah. It's cute because my kids will call me out. I'll walk into a room and they're like, Mom, what are you looking for? What can I help you?
I don't know.
I don't know. I'm just looking and hoping that I remember what I'm looking for. But yeah, so I definitely think it's given me a whole new perspective on the different areas I need to work on and grow in and continue.
A lot of personal reflection.
A lot of personal reflection. I ask for a lot of forgiveness and I have a lot of conversations with my kids. You know, I know sometimes mommy yells and I don't want to be a yeller. I really want to find calm before I respond to you. And that's something I'm working on, you know, and just being very transparent with them, I think has been something I've been really trying to grow into with each of them, is just that complete transparency. And I want them to continue to trust coming to me with things and feeling safe, because I can be a reactor, you know, and I feel that if I stay in that reaction state, that's going to result in them not wanting to come to me because they're going to think, oh, well, Mom's just going to react to that, you know? So I think just being mindful, self-reflective, and practicing self-care, that's been a big thing. Because I'm totally the type that will just like go, 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 and never stop. Mm-hmm. And I've just really been trying to be more mindful of recognizing when I need to pause and when I need to take a break. I need my brain breaks too, you know. I know I need exercise. That's my natural medicine. That dopamine does amazing things for my productivity and my clarity. So I know I need my one cup of coffee in the morning, you know. So I think just figuring out the steps that I need to take to be the best mom that I can be has been the biggest thing. So
what do you think is your greatest gift for your kids that comes from the fact that you have ADHD?
I think that I'm a very active mom. Like, I'll jump on the trampoline with my kids for hours, you know, or, and I think my spontaneity is a gift that I feel like I have. I mean, I can literally just all of a sudden it'll be 1 o'clock. I'm like, let's go to the zoo. You know, like, I'll just
let's hop in the car. Let's roll.
Are you bored? I think we all need to go somewhere. Let's just. Yeah. So I think the spontaneity is another gift that I give my kids. From what I've heard, not all parents can be spontaneous. So I'm grateful for that. And I'm grateful that I have a spontaneous husband too. So that's helpful. That's really helpful that I have a spouse that both compliments me and comes alongside me in, you know, those traits too. So, and empathetic. I think my being an empath has been really helpful in my motherhood, because I feel that when I can feel my kids' feelings, I feel that I can better respond to them.
Right.
When I can intentionally respond to them. So, yeah.
Mama, let's pause there. In part two of our conversation, Caitlin and I talk about, how do we explain to our kids that they have ADHD? How do we teach them new skills and responsibilities and help our ADHD children move forward when they're feeling stuck, as well as how we can connect with our kids to build our relationship stronger? We'll talk soon, Successful Mama. For more resources, classes, and community, head over to my website, motherhoodinadhd.com.